And we thank you so much for joining us today. This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministries, providing financial management tools. Now, you can get a more detailed look into our ministry by going to compasscatholic.org and click on things like the Bible studies. Get a look at the various studies and books that will help you both live a life free of debt. And also, there's a study there that will help you get your important documents in order, organized into one file or one binder. The goal there, less stress on the person handling your estate. Also, click on resources right there at the top of the toolbar. There you will find several tools like calculators. We have 28 in all in English and Spanish. Again, the website is compasscatholic.org. John and Evelyn Bean, who are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, join me today. And let's jump right into our topic. It's the discussion for those in the market purchasing a home. And Evelyn, you too have had a number of homes, haven't you?
Over the years that we've been married, we've probably bought and sold more houses than the average person, wouldn't you say, John?
Just because we're on our ninth house, I don't know why you would think that, Evelyn.
And just to clarify that, too, those are all primary residences. It's not like we bought vacation houses in there.
No, we've never owned a vacation home.
That's right. And sometimes those moves were because we transferred from one location to another. And sometimes it was because we were upsizing or downsizing, depending on where we were at that point in life.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever really... Well, we did upsize in Raleigh, I guess.
And we downsized a couple times, too.
Yeah.
So it had nothing to do with one step ahead of the bill collector?
No. That's what my dad always thought.
See?
So in all that moving around, we've got some tips for you, which we're going to share with you today. But first of all, we want to start off with a verse from Proverbs 24:3.
It says, "By wisdom a house is built, by understanding it is established, and by knowledge its rooms are filled with every precious and pleasing possession."
So these tips that we're going to share with you today will hopefully increase your understanding, wisdom, and knowledge as you consider things to think about when you're buying a house. So the first thing is rent versus buy.
Even today can be a tricky or a difficult, I don't know if it's tricky, but it's the difficult situation because, you know, you have to think, well, how long can I live in this house or must I live in this house in order to offset the cost of buying it as opposed to just renting and saving that down payment? You know, is the rent going to be more or less than the mortgage payment and that kind of thing? And I think typically most people will tell you, if you're going to be in one location for less than 3 to 5 years, that's kind of, you know, 3 years is on the low end, 5 years might be on the high end. If you're going to be in a location for less than 3 to 5 years, you should probably rent as opposed to purchase. Now, if we had followed that, we probably would be about four houses shy of where we are now.
But you know, when we were thinking about this topic for the show, I was doing some searching on websites, and I found a couple of different websites just by Googling rent versus buy.
Yeah.
That will give you the ability to calculate the potential difference between renting and owning a home.
Oh, cool.
So I would suggest that if people are going to make that decision between renting and buying, if you just Google rent versus buy, there's a whole bunch of websites that come up. The ones I found most useful were Realtor.com. There was a good article in New York Times, and there was another one in Bankrate.com.
Oh, okay. Can we link our show notes to that stuff?
We will.
Yeah, okay.
We will. You know, and once you kind of veer on the side of, I want to buy a house, it's almost too late to do the rent versus buy comparison because you're down that road, you're looking at houses, you're thinking about houses, and you get all caught up in that excitement.
It's never too late until you hand over that check. You know?
But you get caught up in the excitement, and it's kind of hard to stop the momentum once it gets started.
Okay, if you say so. I think it's a little more black and white than that.
Yeah, like we've never got caught up in excitement and made bad decisions.
We're always excited to move.
Yeah, I know. This time we're staying in the house so long we actually had to clean it.
I think that when you are thinking about the difference of mortgage and rent and the big thing is that down payment. You really, you know, if you don't put down 20% down payment, then you're going to be in trouble because you're going to pay an extra percent on top of your mortgage interest rate, okay? And so that's something that a lot of people won't consider. That's mortgage insurance. So if you buy a house, then you can paint it purple if you want on the inside. You probably can't do it on the outside because you get the homeowners after you. You can knock down a wall or you can wallpaper or whatever. You know, you have more freedom if you buy a house than if you are renting someplace.
But there are benefits to renting.
Okay.
Because when you live in an apartment, you don't have to do any maintenance on the property. You know, if something goes wrong, you just call the landlord.
I like that idea.
But if you own a house and something goes wrong, you need to either fix it yourself, which is going to mean money in supplies or goods and services, hiring somebody to
fix it for
you.
Hiring somebody, right.
Rental insurance is a lot cheaper than homeowner's insurance.
Yep.
You know, rental insurance, all you're insuring is the goods inside the apartment.
Exactly.
When you're renting, you don't have any real or any property taxes or association fees.
Those things add up, and they don't ever seem to stay the same either. The taxes go up, the homeowner's fees goes up every year. And
the longer you're in a house, the more maintenance it needs.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus, renting means you don't have to spend your weekends and vacation time painting the house or pulling weeds or mowing grass.
You know, another thing that people overlook is the permanence of your location. And, you know, this is what we were talking about before. If you're going to move in 5 years, then maybe you shouldn't be buying. But if you're pretty sure you're going to be there for 10 years or you know, whatever, then buying is probably a better decision.
But it's a gray area.
Yes.
You know, a lot of it is emotions, and it's so important to have facts and figures, which is why we recommend that rent versus buy decision first, because when the emotions get involved, you have facts and figures to fall back on. If you start with the emotions, it's often hard to backtrack and go back to facts and figures.
So you go back to that good old
spreadsheet. It's a spreadsheet, Steve.
Well, it doesn't even need to be a spreadsheet. It could be a good old Franklin T.
Pros and cons?
Pros and cons. Write them down. I think it's good to write them down, though, because that does help to take the emotions out.
The second thing to think about is how much house you can afford, because in our Navigating Your Finances God's Way Bible studies, we encourage people to keep their housing costs at 40% of their net spendable income.
What we're saying there, first of all, net spendable income is your gross income minus all the deductions that you get on your paycheck, taxes and Medicare and your health insurance. And then also you are deducting your giving from that. And so you end up with a number that's probably somewhere in the vicinity of 70% of your gross income. And then you take that, now becomes 100%. And so 40% of that is the total that you can spend on your housing costs, which includes all your utilities, all of your insurance, all of the maintenance. So the
mortgage payment.
Well, the mortgage payment should really only be about 20 to 25%. I think most people go over that. And that's why they have so much trouble in making their house payments come in, all of their expenditures on housing come in at 40%, because they're spending too much on the mortgage to start with.
Yeah, because if all those things add up to more than 40%, that's a real precarious financial position to be in.
Yeah, it can put you in a bad situation.
All right, number three is to get pre-approved for a mortgage before you start looking at houses. Because if you're going to stick to that 40% of your net spendable income as your housing costs, and you get pre-approved for that amount, then that kind of limits you. It's like taking cash to the grocery store. You can only spend what you have. So if you're pre-approved for a mortgage, then you know how much you should be able to spend on the house.
But, you know, what do the banks want to do? What's their motive?
They want to give you a bigger mortgage.
They want to give you the biggest mortgage possible. The amount that they're going to pre-approve is probably way over 40%, way over 25%.
But just because they offer it to you doesn't mean you have to take it.
Oh, but if you give me a bag of cookies, what am I going to do?
I know you. You're going to eat the whole bag in one sitting.
Exactly.
Well, you shouldn't do that. You need some self-control.
And that's, but people won't have self-control. If they know they've got that much money to spend on a mortgage, that's how much money they're going to spend.
Yeah,
that's human nature.
I think they need to be careful about how much they're spending, because if you're over that 40%, it's going to be trouble.
Like we said before, if you don't put down 20% of the total cost of the home, you're going to have to spend another 1% on top of the mortgage payment to cover the mortgage insurance payment. Depending on how much the loan is, if your loan is $80,000, you're going to spend 1% of that $80,000. That would be $800 just to pay that mortgage insurance.
Every year.
Every year. What a waste of money.
So you can avoid that by having a 20% down payment, which needs to be baked into your pre-approval process and the pricing you're giving your realtor.
You got to think about all these things and see, you know, how you're going to handle them.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministries, teaching what the Bible tells us are the best ways to handle money, even when you're buying a house, which is the topic that we're discussing today. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of Compass Catholic, join me in the studio. And today, Evelyn, tell us, when you're buying a house, what should you be looking for from the standpoint of needs?
Well, you have to figure out how many bedrooms you really need. I mean, if you have four kids, do you need two bedrooms or four bedrooms, five bedrooms? Do you need one bathroom, two bathrooms, three bathrooms? Does the house need to be single story or two story? Do you have to have a two-car garage, a one-car garage, or no garage? But all those things help you make a conscious decision on the house, and you don't fall into the trap, which we've fallen into a couple times, of falling in love with something just because it looks really cool. Because we've done that a couple times when we bought houses. You walk in and it's nicely decorated and it's nice and spacious and it's pretty and it's newly painted and you like the furniture the people have, and you get overwhelmed with what the house looks like without actually thinking about how it's going to live for your family.
True. But, you know, when you talk about bedrooms, what are you thinking about? Let me give you an example here. When you were growing up, it was you and your sister and your mom and dad.
Yes.
And you had a two-bedroom house.
Yes. And a one-bathroom house.
And a one-bathroom house.
And it was a small bathroom.
Yes, it was. I've been in that bathroom. And you guys got along just fine.
We did.
You didn't need three bedrooms and two and a half baths and that kind of stuff. So where do you draw a line?
Well, I think that's because where you decide what is really a want or a need. For example, if you have three kids, you have a one-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 20-year-old, and they're all living in the same house, that's probably not going to be a good situation where they're going to be able to share rooms.
Yeah, but the 20-year-old's going to be gone in another year, and then you don't have to worry about it.
And in that case, you might want to make a decision to let the 20-year-old sleep on the couch in the family room to exit sooner. But, I mean, you have to think about your personal family situation and what the living arrangements are going to be.
But don't you think that most people consider their needs to be the optimum situation as opposed to the minimum situation?
Definitely. I think we all do that.
Yeah.
But that's why it's important for both you and your spouse to have a discussion about what you really need, not what you really want. A great example is swimming pools here in Florida.
Okay.
I mean, think of all the houses around us in Florida where you walk in the front door and you can see straight through the house to the backyard, and it's got this gorgeous swimming pool and it's got palm trees and it just looks so inviting, especially if it's a hot day outside. And you think, man, I really need a swimming pool.
Yeah, you mean like every house but ours?
But we made a conscious decision that a swimming pool was just one more thing to gobble up money.
Right.
We didn't want to be tied down to the maintenance, and we purposely didn't look at houses that had a swimming pool.
Yeah, a hole in the ground that sucks up money.
We didn't want to have one. So, I mean, it's a give and take, and, you know, you may not find what you want, but you probably can find what you need.
Yeah, I think you're right, so you got to be careful. You know, I think that's why you've got to create this list of what your expectations are, and put it on paper and talk about it before you ever go see the first house.
Yes.
And then hopefully you're going to be able to use that list as the hammer to keep you from straying too far
It's a sanity check.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your sanity touch point.
Yeah, I agree.
So when you're counseling individuals like young couples that are looking for their first house, their friends already have homes, like you described, walk in the front door, you look through the home, and there's a pool. How do you coach somebody to not get sucked up by that?
Just because everybody else jumped off the bridge,
exactly.
Are you going to jump off the bridge?
You sound like somebody's mother. Well, I would ask questions about what are your long-term financial goals and what do you really want to hope to accomplish? And is this your forever home or is this your starter home? And what are you going to do to fill the rooms? You know, when we lived in Atlanta, we were in a neighborhood that had fairly large houses.
Yeah.
And a lot of the young couples living there had these huge houses with no furniture. I mean, they didn't even stick a furniture in the house. They had maybe a bed in the bedrooms and a kitchen table and a couch, and that was about it.
And you knew that because they didn't have enough money to put curtains up. So if you okay. looked at the house, you saw right into everything that was going on. And it was mostly empty. That totally blows my mind that people would buy that big of a house and then not be able to. But, you know,
and I look at it when I see that. It's the individual that's showing them homes that are convincing them, look to the future, that you're going to be making a lot more money than you are today. So in 3 or 4 years, you'll be making enough money that you can fill that house with furniture. So we'll go ahead and buy that home, even though it's over your budget right now.
And what's that salesperson's motivation?
Oh, yeah, the commission.
Commission.
Oh, yeah, they
absolutely.
Don't care about you.
Yeah, you have to consider that.
Yep.
That's absolutely. You can't take counsel from somebody who's going to make money off of what you do.
Good point, John.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, when you're talking about salespeople, if you have a price range, start looking at the less expensive homes in your price range, not the most expensive home in your price range. Because if you start looking at homes where there's a $50,000 difference, man, that $50,000 is going to make a big difference in what those houses look like and what you like and what you think you can afford.
You know, I would almost recommend to couples that they watch any of these shows on HGTV for about 2 weeks and watch not just once or twice, but watch about 6 or 7 of them.
This is the home buying shows.
The home buying shows where people are going out and they're looking at they only show you 3 houses that they look at. Hopefully they look at more than that. But and they give the realtor a budget. And what's the first house that the realtor shows them?
$50,000 over the budget.
$50,000 over the budget plus, exactly. And, you know, they might get one house that's $500 under budget, but that's it. And so watch that. Get a sense of what you're going to be exposed to when you get taken out to look at houses. Because if you've got a budget that says we can afford up to whatever number, $250,000, $300,000 house, don't tell the realtor that. Tell the realtor we can afford $250,000 instead of $300,000, or we can afford $200,000 as opposed to $250,000. Because I guarantee you, you're going to be pretty close to $250,000 by the time you get done anyway.
With all the closing costs and everything?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so you got to slow the realtor down a little bit to allow you to stay in your budget.
Good point, John. Because they always do try to push you over, at least
in
our experience.
Absolutely.
Number 5 is location. You know, you may be able to change a lot of things about your house, but you can't change the location. Once it's there, it's there. This would include looking at how close it is to schools, to your work, to shopping, to church. Where do you want to be and why do you want to be there?
Yeah, and I think that's important, especially if you have children that are school age, because you want to be in a good school district.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some cities, they in all cities, I think pretty much, they rate the school district. So you want to make sure that you get in a good city because...
A good school district.
Excuse me. A good school district, because there's going to come a time when maybe you're going to want to move. And if you're in a bad school district, it's going to definitely limit the number of people who are going to be able to, or who are going to want to come look at your house.
Well, and your proximity to work is another important thing, because the further you're off from work, the more time and money it's going to take you to commute to work.
That's it.
Especially if you're having to drive a car and you don't have access to public transportation.
Yes, yeah. And you need to know just not how many miles it is to work. So, oh, it's only 10 miles to work. That's not a big deal.
Unless you're in Atlanta and there's a six-lane highway that is stop and go for five hours.
That's the point I was going to make. You know, it might only be 10 hours or 10 minutes, but 10 miles. But how many minutes does it take you at rush hour time when you're normally going to be going to work and when you're normally going to be coming home?
Yep.
And drive that a couple times and figure it out. And, you know, I'm sure that you will be shocked.
It's always a good idea to know what your drive time to work is if you're working and looking for a new location. So commuting costs need to be factored into your math when you're figuring out your budget for considering a location.
And the other thing about location is the taxes can be different. You know, you probably have some type of sales tax for county. And so depending on which county you're buying your house in, the taxes could be more or they could be less. And so understand that in addition to the schools and, you know, how close it is to work and that kind of stuff.
Because that'll come up every time you go to the big box store or the grocery store or whatever the tax situation is in that location.
Well, and just your property taxes is what I'm thinking about. Okay. You know, our property taxes in our county in Florida are like $2,400 a year. You talk to people who live in the New York and anywhere in the vicinity of New York City, and their taxes are $12,000-$14,000 a year. Well, that's a huge, huge difference.
Yes, it is. That's why we don't live in New York. That and the snow.
And the people and the, you know, all the hubbubs. What's next?
Number six is a 15-year mortgage instead of a 30-year mortgage.
Okay.
Because getting a 15-year mortgage means you save about two-thirds of the interest that you would pay on a 30-year mortgage.
That makes sense to me. But your mortgage payment is going to be higher.
The mortgage payment is going to be higher, definitely.
Right.
But overall, over the cost of paying off that mortgage, you're going to spend less.
I agree. Over the lifetime of the loan.
Yes. Now, a lot of people think they can have a 30-year mortgage and make extra payments on it. But the chances of that happening are probably slim to non-existent.
We've tried that. How did it work for us?
Not until we were got smart did it work.
even then, it didn't work very well.
But people
There's too many things that can happen that takes that extra couple hundred dollars.
You know, people look at the 15-year mortgage and say they can't afford that payment. But if they can't afford that, they're actually going to pay more over the life of the loan for the 30-year mortgage.
Yes,
so what makes them think they can afford the 30-year mortgage?
Absolutely true. I agree. The other thing I think you need when you buy a house is you need to have an emergency fund or a slush fund or a house fund or something. You've spent all your money probably in paying the closing costs and putting the down payment down and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you're going to have to do some stuff to that house right away, in all probability, unless it's just a spanking brand new house. And if you've spent all your money, how are you going to do that?
Well, and I wouldn't refer to it as an emergency fund. I would call it more like a slush fund or a housing fund, because there are, as soon as you move into a house, there's a ton of stuff you need to do.
Yeah.
You know, from painting to repairing things, maybe you have to buy new appliances, window coverings. There's just always something to do when you move into a house, even if it's a ton of cleaning supplies or providing food and drinks for the people that helped you move.
Yeah.
There's additional expenses.
Yeah. What about decorating and furnishing the house? I mean, we talked about the people in Atlanta who didn't do any of that.
Take your time. The thing we found after moving so much is that the longer we lived in a house, the more easier it was to decide what we wanted in the house. Whereas if you just go in and move into the house and try to buy everything right away, you're not sure how the house lives. So it's better to wait and take your time to do that stuff.
Okay. You know, we've learned these tips as we've bought and sold houses in various locations around the country. And one of the most meaningful things that we learned was from Matthew 7:24-27. Everyone who listens to these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rain fell, the floods came, the winds blew and buffeted the house, but it did not collapse. It had been solidly set on rock.
One of the most important items is to make a conscious, prayerful decision. Now, for those that may be first-time home buyers, or if you're a compulsive buyer, do not jump at the first house you see. This is where you seek godly counsel. Have your parents or someone that has experience in buying a home come with you to ensure that you're making the right decision. Now, before we leave today, let's get to a question from one of our listeners, John and Evelyn. I just got a copy of my credit report and saw a debt on there from last summer that I do not recognize. What should I do?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to contact the credit reporting agency and file a letter of dispute. And it's real important to do it in writing, either through a letter that you send certified or an email, because you need documentation of what you told them and when you told them.
Yes, because, you know, when they receive that letter of dispute, what they're going to do is they're going to contact a company that says that you owe them money. And if the company cannot provide documentation within 30 days of what that debt was and why and all that good stuff, then the credit reporting agency is supposed to delete it from your credit report. Make sure that you send your letter by certified mail with receipt capabilities so that you have proof that you sent them the letter.
And follow up and make sure it's been resolved.
Yeah, don't just think it's going to happen.
Just because you sent the letter.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
John and Evelyn, as always, thank you so much. Now, if you have a financial challenge and you would like some help from John and Evelyn, simply email the questions to ask@compasscatholic.org. Well, we appreciate you listening and hope you join us again next time for Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministries, and this is Breadbox Media.